Welcome back to the third hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. The whole remaining hour is going to deal in one fashion or another with the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We're going to be hearing an NPR report on the arrest of Warren Jeffs, the leader of this group who's been on the run from the FBI for some time, an ABC News interview with a former member of his cult, and then we'll go in depth into the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints with James Walker of the Watchman Fellowship to round off everything in this third hour of Issues, etc. LCMS World Relief is busy. Yesterday, we just did a very briefest of reviews on the anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. Of course, that is but one of the things that has been calling for the attention and that touch of mercy from LCMS World Relief in the last 3 or 4 years. To get the big picture, just go to our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find a link to LCMS World Relief there. And at their website, you will find the whole gamut of what they are doing worldwide and here in this nation to bring the Christ-centered and cross-focused relief they're known for to those in need. For more information, our website, issuesetc.org, or you can call and donate toll-free to LCMS World Relief, 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438. You probably heard about this. I was so happy to hear this. I really was. You know, when they catch a bank robber, when they catch a fugitive, when they catch a burglar, you're always kind of happy to hear that they got their man. But this one actually made me happy. Warren Jeffs had been on the run from the FBI and on the top of their most wanted list for several months now. He'd been running a cult, a polygamist, some say Mormon cult. And it was as simple as a traffic stop right outside of Las Vegas. Here's a story from National Public Radio.
The leader of the nation's largest polygamist group is now in police custody in Las Vegas. Warren Jeffs had been on the FBI's 10 most wanted list. He was charged in Arizona and Utah for allegedly facilitating polygamous marriages involving underage girls. Jeffs has more than 6,000 followers who believe their leader is a prophet of God. From Salt Lake City, NPR's Howard Berkus reports.
The prophet of polygamy hadn't been seen in public in more than 2 years. Warren Jeffs was determined to avoid capture, judging by the list of items found in the red Cadillac Escalade he was discovered in last night near Las Vegas. George Tagliati is with the Nevada Highway Patrol.
There were several items found in the car, everything from a large number of cellular telephones, laptop computers, 3 wigs, quite a bit of cash, in excess of $50,000 in cash. The inventory search is not complete, so we haven't gotten completely through the vehicle, but there were lots of items in that car, and we're going to be looking at them.
Also found were sunglasses, portable radios, police scanners, and unopened envelopes believed to contain cash contributions from his followers. Warren Jeffs had been the subject of an episode of the America's Most Wanted TV show. He was on the FBI's 10 Most Wanted list, right up there with Osama bin Laden. And the reward for his capture reached $100,000. But it was a routine traffic stop triggered by a temporary license plate that transformed Jeffs from fugitive to defendant. Police had feared violent resistance, notes Stephen Martinez of the Las Vegas office of the FBI.
There was speculation that if we did encounter Mr. Jeffs, that there could be a violent confrontation or something like that. I can assure you there was not. He was arrested without incident.
The fuss over Warren Jeffs isn't solely about polygamy. There are thousands of polygamists outside his group who are not targets of prosecution. Jeffs has a particular brand of polygamy that involves underage girls, some as young as 13, according to former members of his group. They're allegedly assigned to men decades older who may already have other wives. Jeffs is accused in Utah of rape as an accomplice for facilitating underage marriages. He faces a similar charge in Arizona, which is also prosecuting 8 of his followers. Mark Shurtleff is the Attorney General of Utah.
He's been telling them for years, 2 years, that he will never be taken, that he, that God is protecting him and he is above the law and can't be touched by civil authority. So it's just been proven that that's not the case, and he will have to stand to answer to the law and justice. So that's an important message to his followers.
Someone who knows Jeffs and his followers better than most believes the arrest will only embolden them. Rodney Parker is an attorney who has represented Warren Jeffs.
Not only does it galvanize this sense of persecution, but it brings the people closer together. It makes them more insular. It makes them more convinced that they're right.
Jeff's is the biggest catch yet in a crackdown on polygamy that began 8 years ago. His Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints dominates adjacent towns on the Utah-Arizona border. Polygamy is part of the group's religion, which mirrors the early teachings of Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormon faith. Mormons disowned polygamy in 1890, and Jeffs and his group have no connection with mainstream Mormons. A leader in the polygamous towns reached by NPR declined comment. Howard Berkus, NPR News, Salt Lake City.
All right, there's a story from National Public Radio. That raises one question I'm going to hold for our guest in the next half hour of the program, James Walker, especially. It's a very important question, and that is this Mormonism that we're looking at? Are we looking at Mormonism as it was in the days of Brigham Young and Joseph Smith in those early days before 1890? Is this what Mormonism would be had Mormonism never renounced, at least for legal reasons, the practice of polygamy? Is this what Mormonism looked like in those days, and why it was... they didn't have the FBI, but it was being run from town to town, city to city, and state to state, wherever it came. And it also ran afoul of the law more than once. We're talking about the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and the arrest of its leader, Warren Jeffs. Its audio open lines are call-in numbers 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. And I can't help but think about, was it last week or week before last, we ran some audio open lines and we had audio from a pro-polygamy rally that was held, I don't think it was Salt Lake City. It was held in a city up in Mormon country, I should say, and... it was, what was remarkable about it was not only was a pro-polygamy rally and a protest of sorts, it was held by the children of polygamous marriages. Teenagers, little kids out there with their signs marching 200 strong made national news saying that polygamous marriage is a good thing and it shouldn't be illegal, and they felt like they were being discriminated against. And one of the most striking things about that audio was near the end when the reporter interviewed some of the teenage girls who were involved in this pro-polygamy rally, who had themselves have been the product of polygamous families. Reporter simply said, well, when it's time for you to marry, are you going to marry into a polygamous marriage, a plural marriage? And each and every one of them, with a big grin on their face, said yes. You know what their reasoning was? These teenage girls, look, 14, 15, 16 years old, they said, who wants to who wants to take care of your husband all by yourself? Who wants to iron all his shirts? Let somebody else do that. That was the appeal for them in polygamy. Steve calls from his car. Hi, Steve. Steve, welcome.
Hello. How you doing?
Doing well.
Great. You know what I find is that you look at this guy, and you can look at that anytime you get these cult figures who lead these groups claiming to be a prophet. My thing is, though, if they really are claiming to be a prophet, let's compare those to how did prophets act in the Bible. And I was thinking of St. Paul. And what did St. Paul do in the latter chapters of Acts when the Jews were trying to get him? He didn't run away. He dealt with the issue, and he said, hey, if I'm guilty, I'm guilty, but let's deal with this in the right way. And I think that when you see people like that who are trying to say, well, I'm above the law, that's a red flag to me.
I think you just made a great point. Thank you very much, Steve. I think, well, first of all, Warren Jeffs, in calling himself a prophet, and his followers in ascribing to him prophetic power, one of the news reports, the ABC News report we're going to play here in just a few minutes, says that they worship Warren Jeffs. That's another question I've got for Walker when we get him on, is Warren Jeffs not only the prophet of this group, is he the, in a sense, the deity of this group? Well, he's only being consistent with Joseph Smith. Joseph Smith claimed to be a prophet. Joseph Smith and his immediate successors claimed prophetic status. And they demanded from their followers the same kind of blind obedience. They didn't always get it, if you read Mormon history, but they did demand it from their followers, and sometimes they did. get that kind of blind obedience. So Warren Jeffs is more authentically consistent with Joseph Smith and the origins of Mormonism than I think the modern form of Mormonism is in the Latter-day Saints, the Salt Lake Latter-day Saints group. Now, they do have a prophet. They generally tend to choose, at least in my opinion, the most innocuous and harmless old men to be their prophets. That way, I think the machine of the church can go about its business without being troubled by someone who would say, hey, it's time to move to California, or something like that, like Joseph Smith would have done in his days as a prophet. But, you know, in that way, they're not much different from other church bodies who generally tend to choose the harmless old men to run them, so that the church bureaucracy can do its thing without being encumbered by any prophetic voice, pastoral voice. So Warren Jeffs is being consistent here. He's following in the footsteps of Joseph Smith. But you made a great point, Stephen. That is, look at how the prophet and apostle Paul dealt with issues of the law. When Paul ran afoul of the law, and I think one might argue he spent the better part of his missionary career running from the law in one form or another, whether it was the town officials or the leaders of the synagogues, or later on in his career, the Roman officials. He didn't run. He didn't run away. If he had done something illegal, he answered for it. And if you read in the book of Acts, we've even got an account of Paul's trials, a transcript of Paul's trials, where he makes the case, you know, I haven't done anything illegal. Now, the Jews back in Jerusalem think I have by preaching Christ. But let me tell you what I'm preaching here, and you tell me if it's got anything, if you find anything wrong with it in Roman law. He stayed. He was arrested. He stayed, and he made his case. And the worst they ever found him guilty of was advocating for strange gods. Now, Warren Jeffs doesn't seem to be following in the footsteps of the Apostle Paul. I think you're right, Steve. All right, here, following up on the story, if you're wondering what it really was like to live under Warren Jeffs when he wasn't on the run from the FBI in the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, here's an ABC News interview with a former member of his cult.
Now to Warren Jeffs, leader of the country's biggest polygamy sect, and until Tuesday, one of the FBI's most wanted. Among the charges he now faces, that he arranged marriages between older men and underage girls. Primetime's John Quinones talked to one woman who found herself in just such a marriage, a former Jeffs follower, whose story is a disturbing look inside the Church of Warren Jeffs.
Amidst the scenic mountains of Colorado lies a secretive community cut off from the outside world, where the women wear clothes from another century, and polygamy is a way of life. Laureen Jessup grew up here, a member of a splinter sect of the Mormon Church, which worships its leader, Warren Jeffs, a longtime fugitive arrested just yesterday.
How big was your family?
My dad had 56 children.
How many wives?
Four wives.
Young girls are routinely married off in their teens to much older men. Laureen, at just 19, married a 50-year-old man named Val Jessup, whom she barely knew, who was already married to her older sister, Marie.
Oh, I always felt like I was an intruder.
She recalls the night they consummated the marriage.
When he had sex with you, she was there?
Yes. He invited her to our bed. She just hugged his back, hugged him all the way through. It was very strange.
And painful.
Painful. And I was very shy. I was scared.
Val defends his actions that night.
I would say about 2 or 3 in the morning then, Marie came in and says, can I come and be with you? It wasn't right. And I was too soft-hearted to say, go back up to your bedroom.
Unhappy, living in a polygamous household, Laureen disobeyed her husband, whom she says once had her arrested and sent her to a mental institution 4 separate times.
I was taught that the only rights a woman has is to be obedient to her husband.
A mother of 5, she stayed with him for 23 years until, with the help of a former sect member, she was able to escape and gain custody of her children.
Many women, if they knew a difference, they would want to be out of there. I've seen them struggle with their husband coming home with a new wife. I've seen the new wife struggle to try to fit in to the family. No place for her because it's somebody else's turf.
And we are joined now by best-selling author John Krakauer. He spent 4 years researching the dark world of polygamy sects in the American West, wrote a book about them called Under the Banner of Heaven. Good morning to you. Good to talk to you.
Good morning.
What will happen to Warren Jeffs' some 40 wives and the rest of the some 10,000 followers now that he's behind bars?
That's a good question. Because he's still alive, and he believes, and his followers believe, he was appointed by God, he will remain prophet and leader. He will be less effective. He's the only one who can perform marriages, so plural marriages, underage marriages will stop. But the church isn't going anywhere. This religion, with or without Warren Jeffs, will continue.
Aren't the parents, though, of these girls just as guilty as Warren Jeffs? If they really want to crack down on this sort of abuse, aren't there hundreds, if not thousands, of guilty parties here?
There are, but it's where do you draw the line? Many of the victims themselves, the people who suffer the most, swear allegiance to Warren. They don't see themselves as victims. They don't recognize themselves as victims. So the parents themselves were victims as children. You know, they were these women who are mothers now, marrying their 16-year-old daughters to Warren Jeffs, were themselves married off to much older men when they were young. It's all they know. This Warren forbids his followers to have contact with the outside world. It's this endless chain of misery that, you know, it's not really about blame. It's just trying to break this cycle. And putting Warren in jail is the first of a very important step.
All right. Now, what they're trying to do here, I'm glad to see that they're not just concerned with just Warren Jeffs, because the question here is, you know, Warren Jeffs is guilty of encouraging this stuff. He's guilty of facilitating a lot of this stuff, and he's guilty of giving some sort of, not legally, but he's guilty, of course, of giving some sort of religious sanction to what's going on in the polygamous community that he had led until the FBI caught him. But, of course, polygamy is a crime. And if you've got 6,000 members there in various compounds practicing this, and by the way, the Fundamentalist Church of the Latter-day Saints is but one of many, many who still do this. It just happens to be the largest. If it's a crime, it is a crime that will now span generations. Because many of these groups have been practicing plural marriage quietly, remotely, in an isolated way, since 1890. That's a long time. That's a long, long time. So the crimes go way, way back, and it's as much a legal problem as it is going to be a problem of a culture. So I'm glad to hear that they're recognizing the fact that there's much more than simply a legal problem of polygamy is against the law and statutory rape is against the law. Those things are big problems, and that needs to be stopped, but it tends to perpetuate itself. How else do you get little girls out there in Mormon land protesting the fact that polygamy is illegal and saying they want to marry into plural marriages when they're old enough, or maybe even now since they're not old enough? How else do you get girls saying this? They say it because it's all they've ever known. And as far as they're concerned, it's the way God wants it to be. All right, back to the story from ABC News on Warren Jeffs and his followers.
I know it's not just teen girls affected by this, but young men in this community are ostracized at some point. Tell us about the lost boys.
Well, it's a matter of mathematics. You need more women than men if you're going to have men marrying multiple wives. So Warren has very ruthlessly cast out young men who were less than perfectly obedient. I mean, sometimes boys as young as 13, 14, he tells their parents, your son is not worthy, he's not fit to breed. And then the parents will be forced to drive their sons, these young teenage boys, to the edge of town out in the desert, 10 miles in the middle of nowhere, and tell them never to come back. And this has happened hundreds of times. And the prospects for these boys aren't good or haven't been good until now, and they've been receiving help lately.
Given the passion of the followers in this particular case, how do you see it going forward from here? Will they create a wall of silence around their leader, bunker down? And you must be surprised that he was taken without a fight. Do you see this group turning violent?
I hope they don't turn violent. And most of the people in this faith aren't violent. I need to emphasize that. Most of them are good people. They're the victims here. Now, there is a cadre, a relatively small cadre of very loyal men who possess many weapons. And, you know, we need to be concerned about them, although I don't know what they can do now. They could try to launch some sort of jailbreak, but it would fail. So violence is probably less of a threat now that Warren's behind bars, but you know, I don't know what's going to happen now. These are true believers. Most of them aren't going to quit believing. Some might break off and follow other leaders who see an opportunity to seize power. But in the long run, the greater problem of polygamy will be there. And I personally, I think the way to address it is to decriminalize it, to bring it out of the shadows, to make it so these people don't fear the law simply for their religious beliefs. And then you can more easily address the real problems of sexual abuse, child abuse, things like that. So, you know, and I think law enforcement, at least in Utah and Arizona, recognizes this. They haven't really prosecuted polygamy for a long time, and they keep insisting in public statements they don't intend to. So why not just decriminalize it? And that would be a good start. But there's a long way to go. Nothing's, you know, this polygamy isn't going to vanish. It's been with us for a long time, and will continue to be with us.
Well, if this spikes your curiosity at all, your book, Under the Banner of Heaven, is a fascinating insight. Thanks, John Krakow. We appreciate it.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
All right, there's a story from ABC News. Can't go along with his solution there. Of course, the problem, he was right in saying that the problem goes much deeper than simply plural marriage. It goes to the culture of these plural marriage communities, to statutory rape, to the fact that this thing perpetuates itself generation after generation. What was his solution? Decriminalize it. First, we decriminalize polygamy, and then we can deal with all the problems that flow from polygamy. Now, wait a minute. The reason it's criminal in the first place is because it produces these problems, among other things. Do you think that if we decriminalized, boy, that sounds like a pretty compelling argument. It's the same argument made by those who favor gay marriage, by the way. They say if you decriminalize gay marriage, then a lot of the problems of being gay in the gay lifestyle will resolve themselves because suddenly it won't have the social stigma attached to it. But Craig had something brilliant to say during when we were listening to this audio. You didn't hear it, but Craig had something brilliant to say. Craig, what did you say about this?
I say a lot that's brilliant. Yeah. Let me tell you.
Don't ask him to access our call.
Actually, he's a brains behind it. He's a brains behind the show. What did you say about this whole thing?
You know, I said that it seems to not be illegal to live with three, four, or five women, but the minute you get married, you get that piece of paper, you go in front of the judge, it all of a sudden becomes illegal.
And the fact is, they didn't go in front of the judge. I mean, legally, none of these marriages are binding. Legally, none of these marriages are binding. But you're right, Craig, you point out a real flaw in society in general, and that is, heck, if I wanted to be like Jack Tripper and take up with two women, or maybe three, or maybe four, and let's say Jack Tripper actually was, you know, making time with all three women, or four women. And heck, if I wanted to throw Mr. Roper in there too, or Mrs. Roper, I could do it, legally, and no one's going to stop me. But the minute I tried to marry Mr. Roper, or the minute I tried to marry Mrs. Roper, then suddenly it's illegal. Now, it sounds like it's a much more fundamental problem at work here. I mean, it's not just what is legal and illegal. It's a failure to recognize what's right and what's wrong. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about the Fundamentalist Church of the Latter-day Saints.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Martin Luther is hailed as one of the most influential church reformers of the 16th century. But what kind of ideas drove Martin Luther? How was Luther's theology related to his ideas on politics or philosophy? Luther's World of Thought is our Issues, Etc. book of the month for August. This hardback book is $29.99 plus shipping and handling. For more information about Luther's World of Thought, call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, or visit our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find Luther's World of Thought right there on our homepage, issuesetc.org. Learn more about Martin Luther's world and Martin Luther's thought with Luther's World of Thought, issuesetc.org, or 1-800-325-3040, It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August.
Death. Now, is it really very good?
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the free booklet, Where Did Cain Find His Wife? Well, Ken, that sounds like maybe a cruel thing to say, especially to someone who may have just lost a loved one.
Well, it is cruel, Mark. We wouldn't think of saying such a thing if we're trying to comfort a friend who's at his wife's grave, for instance. And yet this is the most widely held view of death. Sadly, even many Christians believe it. Now, let me explain. After God created the world and everything in it, he said his creation was very good. But if you believe that millions of years of death and suffering and disease came before Adam, then you must believe that death was a part of the world that God called very good. In other words, the piles of bones under Adam's feet, full of cancer and all kinds of carnage, were very good. But you see, the Bible gives the right view of death. It's an evil enemy. It invaded God's good world about 6,000 years ago. Jesus Christ went to war against this enemy, and he triumphed over the grave with his resurrection. Now, this is a message of hope for anyone grieving over death. You see, Jesus Christ has conquered death, and he'll one day cast death into the lake of fire. He offers eternal life to anyone who'll simply trust in him.
One of our most effective witnessing tools is our booklet called Where Did Cain Find His Wife? It's a question that's been posed many times from the Scopes trial right to the present. To read the free booklet, go to our website, AnswersRadio.com. AnswersRadio.com.
I am Professor Rick Neufer, and I am the Dean of Assessment at Concordia Theological Seminary. Our seminary strives to be the very best seminary possible for the preparation of pastors and other church workers. Therefore, we have voluntarily subjected ourselves to the high standards of the North Central Association of Colleges and Universities and to the standards of the Association of Theological Schools. The faculty and administration of Concordia Theological Seminary continually assess its programs, curriculum, and teaching methods, all so that we can be the best that we can be and offer our students an excellent education. We take St. Paul's word to Timothy seriously, that pastors should be apt to teach. They must know the faith and be able to articulate it.
For excellence in theological education, call Concordia Theological Seminary, 1-800-481-2155. Dining with Sinners. That's what happens every Sunday at Bethany Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights, Illinois. The Lord Jesus himself comes and spreads his banquet table before us, sinners, not a target group of professionals, but sinners in need of the one thing that only he can give, the forgiveness that he won for us at the cross. Christian, seeker, unbeliever, it doesn't matter. All those who are burdened by their sin and hungry for God's forgiveness are invited to visit Bethany Lutheran Church, 5600 Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights. Welcome back. You're listening to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I was going through our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August and came across this great quote. This one doesn't come from Luther, by the way. This comes from the author who wrote the book. Yes, I haven't even mentioned his name, Heinrich Bornkim, if you're interested. And then it was translated into English, so perhaps translator and author get equal credit here. Luther writing about the church, and someone looks at something like this Mormon sect out there in the West, and they say, yeah, they got the problems, but look at the Christian church. It's got its problems, too. Listen to this. Whoever wishes to behold some of the church's beauty must not fix his gaze on the ceremonial pomp or any visible display of power, but on the unpretentious but revolutionizing miracles that God works quietly in the human heart through the word and the service of the church. Now, he's reflecting there Luther's thought on the church. The book is called Luther's World of Thought. It's $29.99 plus shipping and handling. To find more out about this book, go to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, and ask for Luther's World of Thought, 1-800-325-3040. Well, before the break, we heard two pieces, one from National Public Radio, the one from ABC, commenting on the various circumstances surrounding the arrest of the leader of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Warren Jeffs. Joining us for the remainder of the program, we're going to be talking with James Walker. He's president of Watchman Fellowship based in Arlington, Texas, about the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. James, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good to be back with you, Todd.
What will the arrest and probably the incarceration of Warren Jeffs do to the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints?
My thoughts on that is that probably what's going to happen is the rank-and-file members will become even more dedicated. They have not only now a prophet, they also have a martyr, so to speak, imprisoned prophet, which I think he'll still be able to control his movement, have his lieutenants keeping everyone in line from behind bars.
What are the differences between this fundamentalist sect of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and the LDS Salt Lake City group, the large Mormon body?
Well, there are a lot of differences. I was born and raised a Mormon, fourth generation myself. So before I became a Christian, I believed in Joseph Smith and Brigham Young and the Book of Mormon, and I share that same heritage as all Latter-day Saints do, actually with the other divergent paths of Mormonism, such as the FLDS. The roots of it do go back to Joseph Smith and Brigham Young, who initially Joseph Smith denied, with numerous rumors to the contrary, denied that he believed or practiced polygamy. But late in his life, in 1844, the founder of the Mormon Church, Joseph Smith, released a revelation in which the Doctrine and Covenants, section 132, in which he said God had commanded him and other faithful Latter-day Saints to practice what they call plural marriage. And so the Mormon Church itself, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, repudiated or discontinued the practice of polygamy in the 1890s. So today, the Latter-day Saints, the average Mormons, the Mormon missionaries that we see going door-to-door, they no longer believe or practice polygamy. According to their doctrine, what I was taught when I was a Mormon was that in 1890, the Mormon prophet had a new revelation telling us to discontinue the practice of polygamy. There's a lot of politics behind that as well, I found out later. But when the new revelation came out, many faithful Mormons in the 1890s and since have thought that the church itself, the Mormon church, had gone astray, and that polygamy was, as Joseph Smith said in the scriptures, an everlasting covenant. And it's still in the Mormon scriptures. That's part of the problem. If you open the Mormon scriptures today to the Doctrine and Covenants, it still very clearly teaches that plural marriage is to be an everlasting covenant. And so what has happened is some Mormons believe that the church had gone astray and they continue to practice polygamy, and thus you have the splinter groups. And we estimate that there's over 100 different churches today who believe that they are the real followers of the Book of Mormon and of Joseph Smith and that still practice the plural marriage doctrine.
Are they right? Objectively, are they the rightful heirs, at least in terms of the practice of polygamy, with Joseph
you'd
Smith?
You'd probably find more similarities with 21st century FLDS and the early Mormonism as practiced in Kirtland, Ohio, and in 1830, certainly by the 1840s in Nauvoo, Illinois, you would find that, there's a lot of commonality. A couple of other factors besides the polygamy that are some parallels. Brigham Young, the second Mormon prophet, on numerous occasions from the Tabernacle in Salt Lake City, preached a doctrine that was later called individual blood atonement. And what he taught was that for certain sins, such as for certain forms of apostasy, that for certain sins, the blood of Christ would not atone for your sins. Your own blood must be shed unto death. And he even had graphic illustrations of how he would put a javelin through his wife if he found her in adultery in order to save her and things like this. And, when I was a Mormon, I was taught that that was just never became scripture, and it was just Brigham Young's theory, or it was simply hyperbole. But The church certainly does not teach that today. The Mormon Church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the official Mormon Church, does not teach this doctrine. But the problem is they're still found in the records of the church and in the Journal of Discourses. And so Warren Jeffs has been in recent years beginning to pick up this theme of your own blood has to be shed for certain sins. Another Mormon splinter group up in Ohio, in fact, just this week, Jeffrey Lundgren, a prophet of a Mormon splinter group, who taught and practiced the blood atonement doctrine, has now been sentenced to death. That happened earlier this week. Blood atonement murders, where people are killed for breaking away from the church or revealing certain secrets or apostatizing from the breaking away from the splinter groups. That is that has happened on numerous occasions in recent history. You just played a clip, I think, earlier in the program from an interview with John Krakauer and his book Under the Banner of Heaven. Clearly illustrates some of the, in modern history, blood atonement. So the Mormon Church itself, no, they don't teach that. The Mormons would tell you they never taught it. I would say they don't teach it anymore, but the Mormon prophet Brigham Young certainly taught it. And the third thing that's a very common parallel between early Mormonism and the FLDS would be the United Order. Joseph Smith taught, the Mormon founder, there was a portion of the time in early Mormon history where when you joined the Mormon Church, you had to give all your possessions to the church, or what they call the United Order, and the church would basically take care of your needs in kind of a communal-type society. Well, that's very similar to what has been set up in what Warren Jeffs calls the United Effort Plan there in Colorado City and Hilldale, Utah, and also down here in Texas where I live. The property that where the members live on the compound, the property, the town, is basically owned by the FLDS, by the United Effort Plan. And thus, you're allowed to live there as long as you're tithe-paying, faithful, and obedient to the prophet. But the moment that you have concerns or differences, you lose everything because the church owns it. You don't own the home. Your church owns the home. So you lose your home. Warren Jeffs also has, and his father, Rulon Jeff, have both been known to take a man's wives away from him and children and assign those wives to other men. This is a common practice. And so some of that, at least the economics with the United Order, can see parallels with early Mormonism.
Is there another parallel, and that would be simply, I think one could argue that the present-day prophet of the LDS Church in Salt Lake, Hinckley, he's, I think, respected and venerated by Mormons, but there's no cult of personality at work here. But it seems to me, at least in a psychological sense, you can draw a lot of parallels between Warren Jeff's cult of personality with the FLDS and Joseph Smith and Brigham Young and maybe a few other of the earliest prophets and the psychological emotional sway that they held over those who followed them.
Yeah, you find that. I think Joseph Smith especially was certainly that kind of dynamic personality that basically people would be willing to die for him. And you still see that in the Mormon Church. Maybe it's more of an epistemological issue. How do you know what's true? Ultimately, in Mormonism, it comes to the prophet. If the prophet's of God, then that's the final arbitrator. You know, sometimes you see the bumper stickers where Christians will say, the Bible says that I believe it, and that settles it. Well, the Bible's not 100% accurate in Mormondom, and so what you have is the prophet is the ultimate hermeneutic, the ultimate way of interpreting reality.
Can you give us a brief history of this particular group, the FLDS?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it's fascinating.
When did they start?
Well, the roots of it go back to the 1890 when the Mormon Church at that time desperately, the Mormons desperately wanted Utah to become a state. And the United States would not allow that to happen because of the doctrine of polygamy, so it remained a territory but not a state. And so in 1890 there was a new revelation, polygamy is discontinued, and there was all kinds of problems that caused. You could imagine if you believe God wanted you to practice plural marriage, and so let's say you have 18 wives, or maybe in the case of Rulon Jeffs today, you have 50 wives, And then all of a sudden, God supposedly speaks, and now you're not to have these wives. So what do? Do you turn them away? Do you still support them? I mean, what about your children? These are all problems that came out of Mormonism's rejection of polygamy in the 1890s. So a number of Mormons, and some would say they initially had church sanction. Now, whether that was true or not, it's debatable. But a number of Mormon leaders believe that they were called by God to continue the practice even though the church officially banned it. So a number of groups down in Mexico, throughout the western United States, there's another group we have a profile on called the True and Living Church of Jesus Christ of the Last Days. There's numerous groups that continued to practice what they considered to be the real doctrines of Joseph Smith and Brigham Young, and the FLDS Church was one of them. Well, the Mormon Church reacted against it. It started off in 1935, and down in the Colorado-Arizona border, Utah-Arizona border, at a town called Colorado City. In 1835, it began, and the Mormon Church, the official Mormon Church, tried to crack down, making everyone sign an oath of obedience that they would stop practicing polygamy. Well, they refused to do so and formed this united effort plan and pooled their resources together. Well, what ended up happening is state government got involved. And there was an infamous raid in, I think, 1953, a raid. The town at that time was actually called Short Creek, and there was the raid on Short Creek published throughout the United States. It made the cover of Life magazine, and children were ripped from their parents' arms and put into foster care. Men were charged with polygamy, illegal cohabitation, rape, and it was a huge raid with hundreds and hundreds of polygamists arrested. And there was a public outcry against that. And what ended up happening was within a matter of months, the polygamists were back to living there and everything went back to normal. So there was some infighting amongst the groups and some splinterings, but eventually Rulon Jeffs became the leader of the church, and that's when a lot of the growth really started happening. Rulon Jeffs is Warren Jeffs' father. He passed away just a couple of years ago, but he practiced and promoted the polygamist lifestyle, and he was ruthless in I think you had in your previous part of the program talked about the Lost Boys incident.
Yeah.
Yeah, in other words, you have the problem of if a man in his 50s or 60s is going to have 20 or 30 wives, you know, you have the problem is there's not enough young women to go around, and so young boys were basically banished from the compound because they became rival suitors for potential wives for these older elders who Jeffs wanted to reward for their faithfulness by giving them more wives. So you got all this going on, and you just give you this description I have published in a profile that I wrote on the FLDS. When Rulon Jeffs died in 2002, he was 92 years old. He had an estimated 75 wives and more than 60 children. His house, now catch this, it's a 23-bedroom home with two kitchens and 10 bathrooms. And at that time, Warren Jeffs' son was reported to have at least 14 wives. The vice mayor of Colorado City has now said that, more recently said that he's estimated to have about 50 wives right now.
I gotta wonder, I mean, as an outsider, as a former insider, not in the FLDS, but in the Latter-day Saints group, you look at this, and I'm wondering to myself, how does anyone live in a community like that, no matter whether they think Warren Jeffs is the real prophet or not, where one guy takes to himself all these wives, apparently is therefore demanding quite a bit of this community's resources, if he's got a house with 23 bedrooms and 10 bathrooms and two kitchens, and he's somehow supporting dozens of wives, and I guess eventually you're going to get up near 100 kids.
There's not a problem for the prophet because the prophet has profit, if you know what I mean. In other words, because of the United Effort Plan, 10% of all the income from all the people living in the city comes to the profit. So he's got the wealth. That, you know, when they captured Warren Jeffs, what was that, yesterday morning? He's in a Cadillac Escalade, and he's got, what did he have, $50,000 with him. Money's not a problem for the profit. The problem comes for the rank and file elder who has, you know, 10 or 12 wives and 30 or 40 children in Colorado City. He doesn't have that tithe money coming in. What's happened there is many cases of welfare fraud. There's been the state of Arizona is investigating the amount of fraud that goes on that way, living in squalor, living substandard living conditions for, you know, one man. It's very difficult to support 40 children, you know, and so that does create all kinds of social problems that you see. But the way this works, a lot of it is through milieu control, and that means that Warren Jeffs, the prophet, controls the environment and what information the people receive. They don't have they don't really have access to know what the outside world lives like, and so or if they get it, it's highly filtered. And so if this is all you know, if that's the way your mother was raised and her mother was raised, you don't know that this how abnormal this really is.
We're talking with James Walker. He's president of Watchman Fellowship based in Arlington, Texas, written a profile on the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints for the Watchman Expositor about this Fundamentalist Church, the FLDS. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc. Does the economic situation as it prevails there in a group like that also create the engine that makes this thing perpetuate itself? So I'm a man, and I've got, let's just say, 10 wives and 30 kids. Half my kids are girls. Mm-hmm. Well, one easy way to lighten my economic burden is to marry those girls off to somebody else as early as possible. And therefore, you get the other aspect of this.
Well, that's one of the reasons that Warren Jeffs was one of the FBI 10 most wanted until he was captured yesterday. He helped arrange and helped to sanction the giving of not just multiple wives, but young girls, minor girls. And so, you know, you can't a 14-year-old girl. One of Joseph Smith's plural wives was reportedly 14 years old. So you have the issue of, that helps, you know, lighten the burden for the families if they can lose half their children at a young age, or the daughters at least, and get them married off. But to show you, just for the prophet's point of view, the United Order, the vice mayor of Colorado City, who's left the movement now, has estimated the value of that United Effort plan at approximately $100 million. So there's quite a bit of wealth there for the prophet.
What do you expect to happen to Warren Jeffs, as far as you can tell, with only about a minute to respond there?
Yeah, it's going to be hard to say. Again, I think the followers will end up being more dedicated and devoted to him, not less dedicated and devoted. I think that this raises a whole bigger issue about what is marriage, and if there are parts of our society that want to argue that gay marriage is marriage, then how can you say polygamy is wrong? Mm-hmm. So that's going to open that whole debate up.
How do you explain, I don't know if you heard about this, but last week we ran some audio of a pro-polygamy rally out there. I think it was in Utah.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the children of polygamous marriages. Many of them were teenage girls, the ones who spoke, and they were interviewed in the audio that we had, and the girls were asked, well, when it's time for you to marry, are you going to marry into plural marriages? And each and every one of them said, yes. Why would I want to iron my husband's shirts every day? I'll let somebody else do that and share the burden. What is the appeal to that generation raised in plural marriages?
The appeal, and this isn't universal. There are girls trying to escape that right now.
Sure.
But the people who do buy into it, it goes back to that hermeneutic. If Warren Jeffs is God's prophet, then everything he says is reality. And so once you buy that, once you accept the idea that the Bible's not your authority, but this man's voice from God is your final authority, well, you'll drink the Kool-Aid. You'll do anything at that point.
Finally, then, with only 30 seconds, one of the suggestions made by the author of the book interviewed there in that ABC News piece, I know you heard it, said, look, the answer here is to decriminalize polygamy, and then we can deal with all the social problems that stem from polygamy. What do you make of that
wrong
solution?
That's absolutely wrong. You see that same thing on HBO's new special, drama called Big Love. They paint a picture in which the criminality is the issue. That's not the issue. The problem is that a plural marriage lifestyle creates, it's a sin and creates all kinds of social problems, and that's why God established the one wife, one husband, back in the book of Genesis. So decriminalizing it does not create a solution. If that was the case, you could just decriminalize the rape too, and then you wouldn't have the problem with that either. No, that is the problem. It's not the law that's the problem. It's the practice of Warren Jeffs.
James Walker is president of Watchman Fellowship based in Arlington, Texas. He's written a profile on the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints for the Watchman Expositor. You can read this profile in greater depth. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click links, and then you'll find a direct link to James Walker and Watchman Fellowship. Our website address again, issuesetc.org. James, thank you very much for bringing us up to date and for being so informative and for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd. I enjoyed it.
Well, tomorrow on the program, we're going to be talking about yesterday's New Orleans Ecumenical Prayer Service. We're going to have some audio and get your reaction to it and my reaction. I'm always curious when we gather as a nation for these prayer services, what's said, who's there, who's praying, and what they're praying. We'll see what happened yesterday in New Orleans at that prayer service in remembrance of the victims of Hurricane Katrina. Tomorrow on the program, we'll also discuss the church with Brian Wolfmiller. And we'll find out from Paul Coughlin what happens to a marriage when the husband turns into a Christian nice guy. That's all coming up tomorrow on the program. Tune in tonight at 8 for the rebroadcast of today's first hour of Issues, Etc. In the course of that first hour, we talked about questions that parishioners are afraid to ask their pastors. Pastor Walt Snyder was our guest. That's tonight from 8 to 9 on AM 850 KFUO. Also, in the latter part of that hour, we discussed biblical archaeology with Pastor Dwayne Bomsch. So tune in tonight at 8 on AM 850 KFUO for the rebroadcast of the first hour of Issues, Etc. Here's the danger that faces our country. What we're watching here with Warren Jeffs, and there's a Mormonism angle here that we cannot forget, of course. But there's also the legal and marriage angle that figures into a greater complex of problems. And James mentioned it there near the end of our conversation. The danger that we face is in a society that feels free to redefine fundamental institutions like marriage according to national whim. In this case, it would be gay marriage. Loses not only the moral authority, but also any kind of legal authority to prevent the kind of grand and gross abuses we find going on today only in those cultic sects. That's the danger. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.